It's Iowa Week here on River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. All this week we've been looking at different facets of art and Iowa, where they intersect in different ways. And today we want to focus on architecture. Certainly plenty of architecture out there here in Iowa and the Midwest from the great Frank Lloyd Wright. He once said, "Every great architect is necessarily a great poet. He must be a great original interpreter of his time, his day, his age." So this hour, we want to take a look at the past, present, and future of Midwest architecture. Joining us to do that, Cameron Campbell is Associate Professor of Architecture and Associate Dean of the Iowa State University College of Design, co-author of the American Institute of Architects Iowa book, A Century of Iowa Architecture. He did all the photography in that book. He's also been an associate editor of Iowa Architect magazine since 1998. Cameron Campbell, thanks for coming into the studio.
Oh, thank you, Ben. Thank you for inviting me to be on the show today.
Dan Nagley is also with us. He is Associate Professor of Architecture at Iowa State University, teaches the history of architecture, and has published and presented on Frank Lloyd Wright in Iowa. Dan, welcome to you.
Thanks, Ben. Happy to be here.
I want to reach out to our listeners this hour as well. As we talk about, we'll sort of be marching through the decades here to understand how and why we have the structures, the buildings that we do in our midst. We'd like to have you join our discussion. Tell us, what is a favorite building of yours in Iowa, in the Midwest, perhaps in your very community? What building bowls you over with its beauty? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. You can email us, river2river@iowapublicradio.org, tweet us at IPR Talk, or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. Let's start with you, Dan Nagley. Since you teach about the history of architecture, talk about the architecture going back, I guess, a few centuries to the beginning of architecture here in the Midwest, the conditions that influenced architecture in the start.
I suppose those conditions would largely be the geographical conditions of the state of Iowa, being right smack in the middle of the United States. Iowa, of course, is bounded by two rivers, the Mississippi and the Missouri, and there's a lot of other rivers that run diagonally through Iowa. Besides that, it's ideally suited for farming. Not many trees on many parts of the state. Trees are located, of course, around the rivers. So, ideal farming state. I think that there was Native American occupation of the state as early as maybe 1000 BC. Not much of that is available to us anymore. The rivers would have provided the early access to the state of Iowa, and so early cities are built along the rivers, not just along the Mississippi and the Missouri, but inland as well. The major cities of Iowa, Des Moines, Cedar Falls, Cedar Rapids, Marshalltown, are built along rivers, and that would have provided access and drinking water and mm-hmm. sewage and things like that.
From that geography and the early settlers, what structures, what style of structures that sprang up?
I think that the structures that sprang up largely came from the east and were imported through river ways initially. Later on, there's, of course, farming structures. Farming structures could have either been erected here out of wood. Later still, they would have been prefabricated and brought to the state of Iowa. Geographically, the state is very close, of course, to Chicago and Detroit, which is where a lot of high architecture would have come from. Prairie school architecture would have come to the state in the early part of the 20th century and then proliferated throughout 1920 or such.
Describe a little bit what so we can picture that, what prairie school architecture is.
Okay, prairie school architecture was a kind of architecture that was supposedly native to American. It's built from the ground up. Generally, it's domestic. Sometimes it grew into larger larger buildings. Probably built out of local material finished in such a way that it would exaggerate prairie school tendencies, which were horizontality. Broad overhanging roofs, typically banks of windows, a kind of accentuation of the horizontal as opposed to the vertical, close to the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cameron Campbell, tell us, as you look back in history, you love photographing buildings and spaces. Tell us about the 50 spaces in Iowa you photographed recently. You picked, I understand, a building in Iowa from each decade. Take us back to, I don't know, 100 years ago or so. What do you find interesting in the architecture that you photographed?
Well, yeah, it was really an amazing project to be a part of. It was sponsored by the American Institute of Architects Iowa chapter, which they happen to be meeting as we speak. Today they have their convention in Des Moines, Iowa. But that was an amazing opportunity for me as an architectural photographer to go around the state to all these places that I've been wanting to visit but never had the excuse to do so. And this program by the American Institute of Architects, they went and had other architects vote by each decade what the top building was. And so I went to each one, visited, and tried to get the quintessential photograph of each one of them in their prime location and prime setting. And quite frankly, going through that, because it covered from 1900 to 2000, and the changes that took place, you would start with, some very beautiful buildings that were reminiscent of European styles, all the way through, as Dan mentioned, the prairie style architecture, which we see in the Woodbury Courthouse up in Sioux City. To modernism and how it got its footing here in the state, and some amazing buildings there, some that are arguably some of the best works. I really enjoy the Home Federal Savings and Loan Building by Mies van der Rohe in downtown Des Moines. I think it's one of Mies's very interesting, one of his works, a particularity to it that is rather interesting, and they're currently going through a big effort to renovate it now and bring it up to today's standards and bring back its original vibrance. So that's a real testament to the people valuing architecture in this state.
I want to reach out to our listeners and ask, what are your favorite buildings? What's a building that's in your community, perhaps in the state, that you just find phenomenal? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Discussing the past, present, and future of architecture here on Iowa as we look at artistic Iowa, where architecture is concerned. Both of you, I believe, are big fans. You mentioned the Woodbury County Courthouse in Sioux City. Dan, I think that's a favorite of yours as well.
It is. It's my favorite Iowa building.
What makes it your favorite Iowa building?
Well, it's a prairie school building, but it's contradictory to most of the prairie school principles. So there's a prairie school form, a prairie school dress, a prairie school planning. But the building itself is part of centralized government. It's right smack in the middle of Sioux City. It's an urban building instead of a suburban or rural building, which is contrary to prairie school. It's also made out of steel. It's a steel kind of high-rise building. It has a high-rise component that seems to sit upon a 60-story block. It doesn't really, but the other interesting things about it is it has a colonnade to the outside, which is a typical governmental accoutrement, right? But the colonnade is massaged into prairie school form. It has a dome, which is again a typical governmental accoutrement. But the dome is interior instead of exterior, kind of difficult. Has a really really beautiful penthouse banquet room that's no longer used because of various codes, but one of the really, truly great spaces in Iowa, and you can see forever from up there.
Mm-hmm. Who was the architect on that?
Architect was out of Minneapolis, Purcell and Elmsley, but typically courthouses adopt a neoclassical style. This was very unusual, largely because the courthouse was commissioned of William Steele. William Steele won the commission in a competition with a neo-Gothic style building. He then contacted his friends, Purcell and Elmsley, who were Prairie School architects extraordinaire, to help him out, and they kind of took over the project. It was built during World War I, which meant that it was built during a kind of confusing era for government, and I suspect that nobody was really overseeing it, so they kind of got away with building what they wanted to build.
Join our conversation with Dan Nagley and Cameron Campbell of Iowa State University discussing architecture in Iowa and asking you this hour, what are your favorite structures in Iowa? Do you have a favorite? 1-866-780-9100. Martin is with us from Des Moines. Hi, Martin. Would you like to answer the question I just posed?
Yeah, one of my favorite buildings in Iowa is the county courthouse in Winterset. My great-great-great-grandfather floated a sawmill from Cincinnati to Winterset in the late 1870s, I believe, and designed the courthouse with its classic dome, and along with that, he built many of the bridges in Madison County.
Mm-hmm. And so you like to visit it, and walking inside is just as pleasurable?
Oh, exactly. It's just still functional, and it's been renovated in the last few years. And it's still a beautiful building. And it's made, I think, from all the native limestone from Madison County along with the timber. And he also built a kiln as well and was producing all the materials for it.
All right. Thanks for chipping that in, Martin. Dan or Cameron, do you know of this Winterset building?
Yeah, I don't really know of it. I was in Winterset maybe 3 months ago. I didn't really see the building, but it sounds really fascinating. And I like the story about bringing the sawmill here and the materials and the kinds of things that are necessary to build the buildings. I think that has something to do with river transportation. A lot of stuff came from the east out to Iowa and other Midwest states that would enable people to build buildings.
Mm-hmm. Cameron, pick another a favorite of yours and tell us about it.
Well, I have a unique challenge because I photograph for so many architects around the state. I've got to be careful not to list any one.
Understood.
But I will say one favorite that I go back to, and I take my students there every chance I get, is the Orion E. Scott Chapel on the Drake campus by Eero Saarinen. There's something about the power of entering into that space. You go through kind of a compression of darkness, and then the power of light in that space is really amazing. Yet it's unpretentious in its massing and form. It's just a simple cylinder on the campus, and yet delicately detailed. And so I really enjoy that building to return to.
Mm-hmm. When you approach a building, a new prospect, something you perhaps just pass by and it pops out at you. How do you absorb it? I mean, how do you approach it and evaluate it, Cameron?
Well, I treat a building like prey. I circle around it with my camera and I start to get a feel for how it sits on its site, and I usually photograph it with a wide-angle lens. But as I, get more and more familiar with the building and enter into it and start setting up, I actually move from a wide lens to a more telephoto lens to try to compress into that detail and understand it better. And for me, that's stalking my prey is a wonderful metaphor for really
right.
becoming familiar with a building.
And doing some photography myself, when you get some larger structures, it can be really hard to capture. You have this two-dimensional photograph to capture something in three dimensions you can walk into and through and around. That's a challenge.
Absolutely. You might say very easy to throw the widest lens you can find, even a fisheye lens, and try to get everything. But mm-hmm. Sometimes in getting everything, you get nothing. And so it's a real skill I've tried to develop through that act to become more focused, try to really get to the essence of an experience or a space, because that's ultimately what the designer or the architect was after in doing it.
Okay, talking about Midwest and Iowa architecture, the past, present, and future. Looking for your favorites, 1-866-780-9100. Jill is with us from Iowa City. Hi, Jill. Do you have a favorite to share?
Hi there. Yes, I'm here.
Yes, go ahead, Jill. Do you have a favorite to share?
Yes, I'd like to suggest the first art building on the university campus. I believe they call it the Art Building East now. And it's one that had some effect from the flooding, but I think it's been on the preservation list so that they can't tear it down, which pleases me greatly, because my dad was the architect for that building.
Hmm.
And he was considered the first university architect in the country. They asked him to come and be an overseer of all of the various buildings on the campus and sort of coordinate things and also design. So he designed that Art Building East and the original Mabee Theater and part of the power plant and part of the water building where they have, you know, they teach people about flooding and things.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, I just think that the Art Building East is so different because of the arches, and that was one of
yes.
the things that he incorporated in his buildings, and I just liked that idea.
Thanks.
But he was also the original president of the state AIA.
Mm, interesting. Jill, thanks for sharing that, a little bit of your family heritage in architecture as well as these structures. Let's talk about Iowa City because, Dan Nagley, perhaps you can jump in here. We have the old structures, the building she just referred to. I believe it's, I don't know if it's vacant. It looks vacant, but there's been a
lot. I think it is vacant. We were down there last weekend.
The terrible flooding of 2008 took its toll in Iowa City, but there are new structures that have grown up there, Dan Nagley.
Yeah. I think right across the street from Art Building East is Art Building West, which was a building that was designed by Stephen Hall, a very renowned architect from New York City who has worked all over the world, done a lot of campus work. But if Woodbury County Courthouse were not my favorite building in Iowa, Art Building West would certainly be my favorite building in Iowa. It was completed in 2006, and almost immediately it was flooded out. So I think it was closed for 4 or 5 years from 2008 to 2013. It was a building for art students, still is. It's open now. It's wonderfully restored building for art students as well as art history, magnificent art history library. It sits on a lagoon. It kind of cantilevers out over a lagoon very close to the river.
With some sort of strangely, unnaturally colored water, it seems to me.
Yeah, so I asked about that water because the water is sort of a bluish-green color. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really ethereal.
It's the surface of it, the exterior surface, is iron. It's rust.
Yeah, it's a material called Corten steel. It's intended to rust like that. The rust gives it a kind of protective coating. I think that steel was actually pioneered not far from Iowa City in a place called Moline, Illinois, by Eero Saarinen, who Cameron referred to earlier. Eero Saarinen came out of the Detroit area and was a pioneer in a lot of technological inventions in the mid-century. He wanted a kind of rusting steel for the John Deere headquarters in Moline, and so built that building. The steel has since become a kind of cladding. So what they put on Art Building West is a very, very thin, almost veneer of rusting steel, but it's intended to rust like that. The rust sort of, I think, takes the technological edge off the building, and yet, of course, it's a very technologically sophisticated building.
And when you enter the building, Dan, what experience do you have there?
Yeah, entering the building is terrific. It's really one of the great buildings, I think, in Iowa, because when you go inside, it opens up to a vast staircase, and the staircase takes you up to the light. There's a skylight over the top of the staircase. It's not congested at all. It's a very open lobby, but you're just drawn to the top. You're climbing this stairway to heaven. It's really a magnificent experience. Tremendous for art students, I think. I think it's the perfect building for art students. The studios are at the top. That's why I say, you know, they have to climb up to the top. And Hall has magnificently daylit those studios with clear story windows that face the north. So it's, it's a really wonderful environment.
We have to take a break in about a minute, but Cameron, I wanted your comment as well about the area that Dan is referring to on the west side of the river in Iowa City. Then we've got plenty of calls for the second half of the show. Cameron, you're a big fan of the structures as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree with Dan. The Stephen Hall building's really a magnificent piece of architecture, but I would also say the University of Iowa in general has had a wonderful commitment to great architecture throughout its history, and the big bringing in big name, nationally recognized, internationally recognized architects, Frank Gehry for the Advanced Technology Lab, who partnered with HLKB, a firm out of Des Moines. LMN is currently finishing the music building. They partnered with Newman Munson. And Cesar Pelli, the Hancher Auditorium with OPN, and Norman Foster, the Children's Hospital with HERI out of Iowa City. I mean, these are all very noteworthy architects doing, you know, their thing, their signature building on that campus. And that commitment, I think, is a really important part to, you know, establishing the history of that university and carrying it forward.
Mm-hmm. New Hampshire just having its grand opening just a few days ago. Cameron, you were able to visit it, I assume.
I wasn't able to visit it for its opening, but I visited it many times on taking students and tours of the campus, but I haven't been able to visit it since its opening, so I'm looking forward to doing so.
Okay, Cameron Campbell with us from Iowa State University, Dan Nagley, two architects, professors of architecture, and we're exploring the past, present, and future of architecture in Iowa and the Midwest, also with help from you. We've reserved some time in the second half hour to have you answer the question of the hour. What building bowls you over with its beauty? Perhaps it's from 100 years ago. Perhaps it's from 5 or 10 years ago, or last year, or this year in the case of the New Hampshire. 1-866-780-9100, river-to-river at iowapublicradio.org. It's Iowa Week, and today we're exploring architecture in Iowa. We hope you'll stay tuned. Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Iowa Week continues here on River to River with a survey of how building design in Iowa and the Midwest has changed over the decades, and talking about your favorites. We're reaching out to you this hour. Tell us about a building that bowls you over with its beauty. 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us to talk architecture in the Midwest and Iowa, Cameron Campbell, Associate Professor of Architecture and Associate Dean of the Iowa State University College of Design. Also, Dan Nagley, Associate Professor of Architecture at ISU, teaches the history of architecture, has published and presented on Frank Lloyd Wright in Iowa. We wanted to get to Frank Lloyd Wright for sure. We had a caller there wanting to ask about that. But tell us a little bit about Frank Lloyd Wright. We can't do a show on architecture in Iowa and the Midwest without mentioning that name. Tell us, what role does he play in all of this, Dan?
Sure. Wright lived in Spring Green, Wisconsin, which is in very close proximity to Iowa. It's about, 4.5 hours from Ames, and probably only 2 hours across the border from Dubuque. The proximity is important. Wright was originally called to Mason City to build a bank and inn building for kind of entrepreneur, wealthy citizens of the city. They had sent their daughter to be educated with Wright's aunts in Spring Green, Wisconsin. So on a trip out there, they saw one of Wright's buildings. They fell in love with it. They commissioned Wright. Wright came to Mason City to work on the design of the building, and there he met the Stocktons. The Stocktons commissioned him to do a house, and famously that was his foot in Iowa's door.
What aspects of his architecture made it unique and new and stick out in a great way at that point?
Well, I think, again, it's Prairie School architecture. It's an American architecture, which was very different than the kind of current fashionable architecture, which was largely imported from the East, and that itself was imported from Europe. So it wasn't a neoclassical architecture, but it was an American architecture. So there's a kind of simplicity of construction that takes place. There's the lack of adornment of traditional elements such as columns and capitals and temple fronts and things of that nature. So Wright had to more or less come up with ideas about building that would be without those kinds of decorative aspects. It's built out of a natural material in the case of Mason City. Mason City, of course, made brick. And he made the building out of brick. There's colored tile on the brick. There's a sort of flow of space from the inside to the outside that one typically would not get from a neoclassical building. There's a kind of emphasis on verticality and even interiority that you don't see typically in a in a neoclassical building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cameron, before we go to calls, Cameron, boil down for those of us who are not architects, and you're using some, of course, understandably, some architect lingo here. Boil down into the essence what an architect must think about in creating a building. Are there just a few simple rules, a few simple criteria, traits?
Wow. Well, that's a...
Can it be boiled down?
I wish it could. I would I'd give a formula to my students and say, follow this, and that'd probably save them many years of education. But I think, you know, what every architect has to address is the fact that, you know, once we've solved shelter and once we've solved protecting people from the rain and you know, keeping a building from falling down, we have to address the issue of experience and the quality of that experience. And I think there are many different strategies. I don't think there's any one right or one only or one perfect that will fit all time solution. But I do think that the attention to that experience, how a space smells, how do you feel? What is it like to walk through a hallway of an institutional building and feel your heels click, you know, that's one sort of sensation that you get when you move through a space.
So when you move through a space, you can enter a structure, you can have a feeling, and then it sounds like very often, Cameron, you would say, well, why do I have this feeling?
Exactly. You reflect on that, and that becomes a memory of your experience there. And that I think, holds the longest, you know, that carries over into the future. And as you reflect on your experience, whatever that may be, you know, we work in the educational environment. So the quality of that classroom has a spatial impact on the education of the student. But every experience you have, no matter what, if you're in the office building, are you exposed to daylight, and is it feel clean and expansive, and you know, how do you reflect on that? I think is how people perceive architecture, and it's probably largely subliminal. You know,
let's go to our callers. We have many to talk with. We'll clip through these and get their ideas, their favorite buildings. Perhaps Jacob in Marshalltown. What do you want to chip into our conversation as we discuss architecture in Iowa?
Hey, good morning, everybody. I want to put a different little spin on this conversation. First of all, we do have a great Frank Lloyd Wright example of his late career here in Marshalltown, if anybody's interested in looking at it. But that's not what I really wanted to talk about. In a 40-year career of construction and historical restoration, I have seen so many buildings destroyed for reasons that make no sense whatsoever. Good architecture is gone. And once it's gone, just like you've been talking about, a part of everybody's history in that community, in that area, is gone. I'll give you a great example. Here in Marshall County Courthouse, in the 70s, there was a big movement to destroy this old behemoth. And it's one of the beautiful county courthouses in the state. designed by the same architect that designed the state capitol. And it came down to dedicated citizens right there almost on the courthouse steps preventing this from being torn down because they saw it as, first of all, they hadn't maintained it. That's a big problem with architecture, is that if it isn't maintained, it does become a liability. And people just don't understand the value. You've talked about it all on this show, about how valuable these experiences are, being in these buildings and whatever. If our community had lost its courthouse, Marshalltown would not be the same town it is today.
Interesting, and, Jacob. We've got other callers. I want to get a reaction. Very interesting comments to Jacob. Let's get a reaction there. Dan Nagley, do you see the problem that Jacob does and the destruction over the past decades and some real beauties here, some real wonders?
Yeah, I do see that, and I think that he's absolutely right. I also think that the Marshalltown Courthouse is quite beautiful, and there is a wondrous Frank Lloyd Wright building in Marshalltown, the Robert Sunday House that's now owned by the Donovans.
At the same time, people have to keep pay for maintenance and upkeep, don't they?
Sure.
And that is usually what leads to the destruction, or at least the debate over a destruction of a structure in a community?
Sometimes that is, yeah. Sometimes maintenance is an issue, although tearing down a building and building a new one seems to me to be a whole lot more effort than simply maintaining the building that you have. Also, there's a kind of value to memory, to place, that's inherent in any large object like that.
Cameron Campbell, I wonder if you've have in your memory a building that doesn't exist anymore that you wish did.
Oh, wow. There's probably quite a few that I can't really think of one that comes off the cuff. But go ahead.
No, we'll go to a caller. We'll come back to that. Perhaps you can think about that a moment. Let's go to Alan in Waterloo. Alan, have you got a favorite building in Iowa to share?
Yes, I do. One of my favorite buildings among many is called Motor Mill, and it's on the Turkey River just south of Elkader, about 7 miles by gravel road.
Mm-hmm.
It's, if you're familiar with it, it's a large water-driven stone mill. It's 3 stories tall, and it's massive, and it really speaks to the ingenuity of it's massive and it's old, and it speaks to the ingenuity of some of the original people that migrated to that area and their efforts to do big things.
Thank you for sharing, Alan in Waterloo. Let's share a couple emails here. An email from Teresa. The Cedar Rapids Central Fire Station is a relatively new building, but the design to me evokes the fire stations of old with its red brick exterior. Every single time I drive by it, writes Teresa, I love it more, and I am so proud of our city for building it. My son is a firefighter, and I like to think that someday he'll work out of that building. Thanks for that, Teresa. Really a testament to how people, isn't it, Cameron, how people identify with this, and it becomes a part of the community, a part of the people who inhabit the community.
Yeah, I was thinking about your previous question and how it ties in with this. I had a good friend I went to architecture school with. He was from Spirit Lake, Iowa, and they had the courthouse on the docket to destroy and replace with a new one. And he led a charge to save it. And I think it was as much an emotional connection because that's where he grew up, and but as well the value of the building. And so eventually, and I think through a lot of his effort, they were able to keep it alive, but I think eventually the challenges of the building always come back to haunt you, especially with our use of asbestos in some buildings. I don't know if that was the case, but I believe that was a factor in that building, and the cost to abate that, the cost to for upkeep, over time, the old buildings and the technology that was used to keep water out, it worked very well for a very long time, but eventually it had to be replaced, and the replacement cost, because of that methodology and the technology, was a lot more expensive because it was very time-intensive and craftsman-oriented, and we just simply don't have quite as much access to the craftsmen that we did for some of those early buildings.
Cameron Campbell with us, and Dan Nagley of Iowa State, professors of architecture, as we start to wrap up this hour, as we discuss architecture in Iowa, past, present, and future. Don from Ankeny likes Iowa State University's Stevens Auditorium. He says it feels like it's going to take off at any moment. Don from Iowa City said he loves the UI's new Hancher Auditorium. Andy, in an email, quick shout out to two of my favorite buildings in Cedar Rapids, CSPS in New Bohemia. I agree with that, Andy, and the new public library downtown. I love the former for its Richardsonian Romanesque arches and the latter for its wonderful green roof. Let's go back to the phones. Richard with us in West Liberty. Hi, Richard.
Hi.
Go ahead. Yeah, welcome to the program.
So my impression is that the most spectacular architectural structure in Iowa is 4 miles east of Iowa City, the Seacrest 1883 octagonal barn. Huh. It was built by Frank Longerbeam, and when it was built, it was reported in the Chicago newspaper. It's one of the largest and oldest, and it has a dome-shaped roof, a Gothic roof, as they refer to it. And there's another barn like it in the world.
And you've been there, it sounds like.
I've been restoring it for almost 30 years.
Wow. Richard, what is it? What is the feeling you get when you go into this octagonal barn?
Well, it's you feel like you're going back in time. And, of course, Iowa has a lot to be proud of in its farming community. I have tried to maintain it in its original structure and the original woodwork as much as possible. I've had grant support from the State Historical Society, and, in fact, the barn is featured on the state's website through the Historic Preservation Grants. So it's there was enough room for 200 tons of loose hay upstairs and 18 horses and 6 milch cows in the basement.
Sounds like a definite stop on that. We talked about some old buildings getting destroyed that perhaps should still be around with it today. Thanks, Richard, for bringing to our attention and the oldest and largest octagonal barn in the country, just here in Iowa. Built 1883, did you say, Richard?
That's correct.
Okay, thanks for chipping that in. Cameron, Dan, did you have anything to add about that barn? Have you been out to that?
I have seen the barn, and I think it's very interesting that at least two of your callers think that buildings that are really instruments, barns, silos, bridges, are the best buildings in Iowa, because I would agree with that completely. I think that buildings as instruments, buildings like barns and silos and bridges, are really what the state of Iowa has to offer to the rest of the world. They're fantastic buildings here.
We have, unfortunately, just a few minutes left. Let's cast our eyes to the present, the future, the environment. How has concern for the environment, resources, and energy shaped our recent architecture? Cameron, can you take that one?
Yes. I think there's been a lot of advancements in that area. I mean, the LEED, L-E-E-D, and that's Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, was probably one of the first ranking industries to check architecture that it was meeting environmentally conscious standards. And Iowa State University can boast that we have one of the first institutional platinum buildings on the campus, even in the College of Design. It's our King Pavilion. Those include lots of things, energy efficiency obviously being a primary one, and green roofs being a contributor to its energy efficiency because of how that reduces the heat gain from the sun and also provides the absorbing of the heat and not just reflecting it back out. And so that's just one of the examples of the many things that is technologically driven. We're seeing a lot more solar panels, although I think cost is always a factor. As cost comes down, we'll see, I believe, more and more of the technology being added to buildings. But there's a building in Des Moines, the Market One building, and it's a very old building, old warehouse, and they did a lot of work to maintain that building. So there's technology in keeping the building, and it's environmentally conscious to keep the old building, as even one of your callers mentioned. There's value in that historically, but there's also value, as Dan mentioned, in not just throwing away the materials. It seems very wasteful.
Dan, what trends, what do you see that we have stretching into the future in terms of architectural trends?
Architectural trends, I think the integration of landscape with architecture would be an architectural trend that would interest Iowa very much, because I think the landscape is very beautiful, and that really the buildings in Iowa that are part of the landscape are those sort of essential buildings that I most admire. So
is that fairly new, seeing the landscape around a building and the building itself as one entity or as working together? Is that something that we've fairly recently thought of as going together?
I think it's something that we fairly recently thought of, but I think it's a very, very old concept, an old concept that lost maybe its credibility during the 1930s and is now enjoying a comeback, I believe. I believe regionalism, which we saw in the 1930s with Grant Wood and other people, where the land became very precious when the economy failed, is something that's making a comeback. Sure, I think it's making a comeback, but I think it's part and parcel of this awareness of energy and this larger awareness of a kind of greater global order that's permeating not just Iowa, but across the globe, really.
Mm-hmm. Sarah emailing us, I love the architecture in Des Moines, from the grand Iowa Capitol to the simple public library on Porter Street. The law library still excites my senses, Sarah writes, and I've taken many student tours there. Next favorite is the Art Center and its three different styles. My sorrow is seeing the demise of buildings during the 1950s we did not appreciate, from the movie theaters downtown, and nothing being done to bringing Yonkers back to life. A question from her: are there architectural tours in Des Moines or other cities in Iowa? If so, they need to be widely advertised so we can appreciate these buildings. What would you say, people getting out wanting to appreciate more architecture? We have just a couple minutes left. Let's go to each of you. Dan, start with you. Where would you say people should start, or what are some must-see areas?
Well, I think there's three really interesting areas in the state of Iowa. I don't know if you're just talking about Des Moines, but certainly the collective areas of the Des Moines Art Center, I think, and I think that you probably can take tours of that. Also in Des Moines, Terrace Hill, I'd go to there. I would go up to Mason City, because Mason City is the site of one of the great Prairie School developments, and there are buildings up in Mason City, such as Frank Lloyd Wright's Stockton House, that one can get inside and see. Iowa City, the University of Iowa, every time we go there, I quite often take my students there, we get tours. I don't know if they offer these regularly, but I think that all you have to do is knock on a door.
Okay, there's some tips. We have to move on for time's sake, a little bit less than a minute. Cameron Campbell, what would you leave us with as far as architectural tips?
Well, I mean, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the building of the century, which was C.Y. Stevens. I know one of your callers mentioned that building, and it remains in my mind both beauty of a building, but also the experience inside, seeing a performance in that space, coupled with the approach and the whole experience of arrival, which I happen to know the architect that designed it. Howard Heemstra worked with Kreitz and McConnell as the architects of the building, and they really thought that through. They designed every aspect of it, and it's still renowned as one of the best spaces for performances in the world.
Okay, we'll leave it there. So much to talk about, but we've covered a lot of ground, a lot of architecture this hour with Cameron Campbell, Associate Professor of Architecture and Associate Dean of the Iowa State University College of Design. Dan Nagle, Associate Professor of Architecture, also at Iowa State University. Cameron and Dan, thank you for spending the hour with us.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on the program, we'll continue with Iowa Week. We'll talk about artistic success. Four success stories: a Hollywood actor, a successful musician, and an art mechanic among the people we'll talk with. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth, and Lindsay Moon. Help from Sean McClain. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.